evening, everyone. This is Veronica Entwistle, and you've tuned into Paradigm Shifters here on BBS Radio. Paradigm Shifters, who are they? They're people that are making a difference and sending a wave of change and evolution through the collective. And today's Paradigm Shifter is a delightful woman, once was from Australia, and maybe again someday, and right now is from Sedona, Amalia Comateros. And Amalia is going to not only travel externally, like from Australia to Sedona, but she's going to teach us a lot about the internal soul-journeying travel that a lot of us, I guess, would like to emulate, learn from, or all of the above. So welcome to the show, Amalia.
Thank you, Veronica. Thank you very much for having me.
It's just a delight. I was through a lot of your books, Spirit of the Stones, A Retrieval of Earth Wisdom. And, you know, this is a really delightful book, and it's all about, well, first of all, I want to say to you, why Sedona? Why did you choose Sedona? Instead of talking about the book, I'll talk about you because you're in the book.
Well, you know, I did not choose Sedona. Sedona chose me. There's a lot of people here in Sedona, Arizona, who have many amazing, miraculous stories, and I'm another one of those. I happen to have written a book, and the momentum and power and push that Sedona had towards me to come over from Australia to come to Sedona was too immense for me to disregard as just a, you know, a very interesting afternoon happening. I was sitting in my stone circle. I had developed and created and worked with a medicine wheel honoring the four directions of east, west, east, south, west, and north. And running a naturopathic clinic of 14 practitioners is a lot of work, as you could well know. I was running a natural therapy clinic with 14 practitioners, and I had found that the only way that would really help me to reset for the next day was to just sit in that stone circle that was my private power spot on the land that I was living on, and to be one with the land. The land didn't demand anything from me. The land didn't complain. It didn't ask of anything. It didn't tell me any of its problems. And that's what I loved doing. I did love being a naturopathic doctor, but I found that on the land, I could be like a stone and not even have to think.
But, you know, there's something else, Amalia, is that when you were young, you had some blasting visionary experiences that spoke of the land and spoke of stones, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I did have. I've always been a bit of a loner. I'm very social. I'm like a worker bee. I'm definitely thriving in the hive of life. But I've always loved to find my own solace, and nature was a way that was very unconditional and very loving. And that's what I'd found in that stone circle, is that I was sitting there meditating and being restful and quiet and doing nothing. And the word Sedona shot through me. I had no idea of what that word was, whether it was a woman or a person or anything. I had no idea whatsoever. But when it shot through my body, it was like a code had opened up, the clicking. Three clicks, and my spine had clicked up straight with each click, and my hands opened up on either side of my head. And that's when this Sedona thing, whatever that was introduced to me. And from there, I had a year of relentless, very powerful, what one may call very shamanic experiences through dreams and omens and visions, as you know in my book, that were something that I could not disregard as just mere paranormal happenings. It was very, very, very powerful for me. That's what happened. Sedona called me and was relentless about getting me here to do the earthwork.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean, the earthwork?
Well, I dare tell you the truth? And I think I will, because I'm a truth talker.
Tell the truth. We've got some pretty dedicated listeners. They want truth, right?
Hello, everybody. The truth is always the best. The truth is always, always the best.
Exactly.
Even if it doesn't feel the best in that moment.
It is always comfortable, isn't it?
It always comes out to be the best and the whole, most whole. As these omens and dreams came to reveal themselves to me, it was shown to me that I was to be a secretary for the earth, and that what I would do is go over to Sedona and listen to the stones speaking. Now, that was not in my line of work. I loved stones, yes, but I was listening to people, not stones. And so now it was revealed that once upon a time, as an ancient shaman in the Anasazi days, which were the original people of the southwest area, the ancient ones, also known as the Hitsatsinoms, and they were the ones that originally had come from the southern America and came up and merged with the Hopi Indians, and these became the Anasazi people. So once upon a time, as an ancient Anasazi, I had coded in certain wisdom into the rocks, or learnt how to work with the rocks in those ancient days, in what we may call past life, past soul incarnations, and I was asked to complete that earthwork, to come to the stones, sit there with the rocks, listen to what they have to say, and return that information to the people of the planet now, because now is the time that this information that the Earth wants everyone to hear is in its most prudent point to be heard now, because of the change that the Earth is going through, and that we are all going through, because we're not separate to the Earth.
Right, a part of the field.
Yes.
So can you tell us a bit about that? What sort of things did you hear about, or is it so scary we don't want to know?
Yeah, it's not really that scary, actually, except for one particular part. It might be a bit scary if you haven't looked at that part yourself, but the first thing that the Earth speaks of, and not forgetting, we're not separate to the Earth, so it really is our own calling with the Earth, because we're one with that whole energy dynamic. We're one with the Earth, and so we're really asking ourselves to go through this change as well. But to get grounded, everybody's busy with the digital lives and the telephone calls and the television and the videos and the DVDs and the running around organizing, and really have disconnected from their lower part of their body. They've disconnected from what I like to call the animal nature, the part that really can just live in the beingness of the moment, the part that can enjoy the sun shining on the body when it shines, not just on a vacation. To get grounded means to put your roots down, and not that you walk around with roots sort of swashing through the earth. It's more the energetic feeling of feeling rooted with a greater part of your own self.
Is that recognizing that we are one with the earth? Sort of
yes,
thing?
That's one thing about being grounded, is being aware that we have a larger body, a capacity to our field, that we're not just separate little things walking around that are separate. We are all one working in this together. We are all one in consciousness. But more the grounding is about bringing all those ideas, bringing all our experiences into the body, into the flesh, into the anchor of our experience, which I call the body.
Mm-hmm.
I call the body the anchor of our experience. And that's embodying our experiences in life. That's embodying the wisdom that we have, the thoughts that we have, and being present. You know, when you see someone who's present, it's very attractive. It's very, very attractive to me. Mm-hmm. When I see someone who's really in their body, I'm not talking about a sports person, that can be very attractive too. I'm not talking only about exercise and being in the body in a fitful way. I'm talking about a presence of your conscious, present awareness, landing into where you are in the present moment and being able to function and work and breathe and laugh and dance through that joy of being. That's what the Earth is asking us to do, to return to the Garden of Eden, return back to that innocence that we could play in the moment. That's one thing.
How do we get there?
Well, number one, we do wear rubber soles on our feet, which really disconnects us and our physical animalistic nature. I don't mean animalistic as in less than, because not forgetting we're all one, but just that part of us that can smell the earth and breathe with the earth and feel the earth, that part. Number one, take your shoes off and just get out to the earth sometime and just put your feet on the earth. If we're all paradigm shifters, we've probably heard the word chakras before.
Of course.
Okay. And for those who may not have heard the word chakra, they're like wheels of light that energetic wheels of life that correlate to the hormonal glands of the body. There are seven hormonal glands of the body, and they go up the body, pretty much the center of the spine, pretty much going up. And these wheels of light correlate to the hormonal glands. And the root chakra does correlate with the adrenal glands. And the root chakra is pretty much at the base of the spine, between the anal opening and the sex gland, the sex organ. That's where the root chakra actually resides and lands, at the base of our body.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of us run from that part. A lot of us have no idea what to feel there. We've been so taught to shun that area of our sexuality, to shun that area of our feeling nature, which is the base feelings.
I think of it as base animal instinct part too.
Yeah, exactly, which is what the earth is asking us to return back to. Not as primitive people, as aware, lit up, fully dimensional beings, but in the body.
The creative vitality of that which is life.
Yeah, which what you said before about my book that was very activating for you. And so, a lotus flower, for example, doesn't bloom without its roots in the mud. The only way that lotus flower blooms and the only way the tree fruits to give us the fruits of life is because its roots are deep in the earth. And that's what we're talking about with grounding. Expand as high as you can. Fly as high as you can. Leap for joy as high as you can. But have your feet on the ground and have somewhere to return back to.
Mm-hmm. So tell me this. I want to jump around a little bit because you had so many envisioning situations.
Yes.
That snapped you open. And when you got over to Sedona.
Yes.
Maybe I'm jumping too fast.
No, that's okay. You go for it.
What was the story about the dragon? Because while you're talking about being present, being in the now, I'm so conscious of our cellular lineages and how, like, for example, you've been in the embodiment of a dragon, or at least metaphorically, if not real.
Yes, I was on a vision quest. Let me tell you first how that happened.
And I just want to throw one other aspect in.
Yes.
Is that so many of us have embodied, not necessarily from this life, very intense woundings, which also affect the present.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking that somewhere in the middle of this conversation is the power of knowing and understanding these and releasing their subconscious drive or something.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes. Now, that coming back to when you said what are the earth directives, another one of the major directives, I'll try and stay on track with you because I know we have a few things piled up here, is the earth is asking us to merge the dualities into oneness,
okay.
Which means bringing the two sides of ourselves that we're not really in sync with, the shadow part of ourselves and the light part of ourselves. The two different parts of us that we tend to run from our shadow. We don't want to look at those parts that are angry or jealous or afraid and terrified of aloneness. There's so many people are walking around at the base of their body, the base of their being, with terror of being alone. But if we let ourselves feel it and bring it in to our experience, into our awareness as an equally and validly divine aspect of the light, then it won't be something we're afraid of. We're going to be able to face it and become one with it and get to know it. It's a part of us. It's our shadow. It follows us everywhere. Why not turn around and bring it in?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what the earth is saying, is merging the dualities into oneness. The masculine side and the feminine side. The doer and the being. The doer and the feeler. These two need to be always brought back into the oneness, to stand at the center. To stand grounded at the central point of all of the aspects of ourselves instead of shunning and judging them and pushing them away. Another thing the earth asks us is to dive into the void. Confront those parts of our feelings that we've been running from. How are we going to grow into the light if we have this dragging inner dragons, perhaps? Now we're coming back to the dragon part now.
Also, just want to say one thing about the shadow is that if we don't embrace it, it runs things unwittingly, doesn't it?
Oh,
takes over.
Oh, very wittingly, actually, not unwittingly.
Well, it may not be what we want to consciously project.
Exactly. You see, so why not? Let's do our work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like digging the garden and pulling the weeds out. We want our flowers to grow with full freedom. We want the Garden of Eden to grow back. We're going to have to do some clearing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line of what the Ask is, Earth is asking of us. Okay, there's lots of people doing work with the green, you know, returning the green energy back and with, you know, doing the vegetable oils and gasolines and all these things here we're doing in terms of saving the Earth on a physical level. But my part and my reminder and my inspiration to people is to do the inner work, because really we have to do our own work in our own backyard, in our own body.
Mm-hmm. And because the inner is absolutely enormous, isn't it?
Well, the inner is not separate to the outer, yeah, absolutely. The outer is a reflection of the inner, and the inner is a reflection of the outer. It's not separated, that's right. Did you want me to say something about the dragon?
Please, I love that story. But I just want to say this one thing that I keep thinking is that our inner is so gigantic, even though our outer may appear to be kind of a nice, normal look.
Absolutely. And when you go into that part of your space, into the interior spaces of your heart, into the interior space of that terror,
mm-hmm.
you'll find that there's a wormhole that will take you directly to freedom. If you go into the pain, like you remember in my book I had that wisdom tooth pain in Mexico. I felt like I was the only person alive. Everyone else was asleep and I was delirious with this pain. Something inside me from the past, and I would say that possibly I would attribute it to being the past life experience that I've had as an ancient shaman. I'm very naturally like that, even though I don't like to use that word for me, but it's already been part of my Akasha, my Akashic records, my wisdom records. Mm-hmm. And so I knew with that pain, I never took any drugs. I don't take any drugs that way to squelch pain. I'll go and I'll sit and really sit with the pain, because it's something I brought on. It's something obviously my body's trying to tell me. So why would I want to push it away and shove it away and not look at it? That pain gets driven down deeper and deeper into more and more deeper problems in the body. That's how, as I know as a naturopathic doctor, it's not something you need to suppress. You need to unleash it, or you need to bring it into conscious body awareness and breathe through it. And so by going into the pain, or going into the terror, or going into the jealousy, or going into the rage, going into the feeling not good enough, if you sit there in stillness and really be present with that and breathe into it and give it the time of day, like a nagging child that always wants your attention, it gets louder and louder and louder until you turn to it and give it your presence. The same with the emotional body. So you'll find that at the center of the pain there is an ecstatic feeling waiting for you. At the center of that trapped feeling there is freedom. At the center of that not good enough there is absolutely a pregnant potential vessel and cauldron that's huge of love.
Mm-hmm. I believe that firmly, actually.
Yeah. So there's a quick way, and that's in it. The quick way of getting out of it is going into it.
So now is the time for the dragon?
Yeah. Yeah, the dragon, I started having the visions of the dragon on the vision quest. I was participating on a vision quest in the big island of Hawaii, where I spent 4.5 years. I was in a very sacred land called Green Lake. Those of you in Hawaii would know what I'm talking about. Very sacred, almost like the Garden of Eden. I was doing a vision quest there, and probably on my third day, I closed my eyes, you know, of course in meditation again with the earth, and found my awareness at the bottom of this huge kind of like egg-shaped vessel. And I saw at the bottom of that egg-shaped vessel that was very ancient and at the same time very intergalactic. It seemed to be both at the same time, something ancient and futuristic. And at the bottom of this egg-shaped vessel was a dragon. And the dragon was curled up and it was dormant. Not even saliva was moving, just completely the tongue was dormant. Everything was still for eons. And the moment I opened my eyes in real time at the vision quest, the dragon opened its eyes and I realized I was one with the dragon.
Right.
So we both you know, me being the dragon and the dragon being me, opened our eyes at the same time, and I suddenly saw through the eyes of the dragon. I saw a primeval way of the earth in its pure colors, in its pure intention, in its pure, I guess, intention. You know, mm-hmm. I saw the Garden of Eden for a moment there.
Right.
I see it all the time, actually, because it's never left us. The Garden of Eden is always there. We just have to tune into that channel. We have to tune into that vision to be able to access what's always there. So the dragon represented this DNA of the earth, the spiralic dance, the way that the energy of the earth moves is always in spiral, like the golden mean spiral, and all the different plants and trees, they work up from the ground up pretty much, or from the center out into a spiralic point, a spiralic journey. And I believe that's how the soul also journeys itself. And the soul of the earth and the wisdom of the earth journeys itself through that spiral DNA blueprint. So I feel like the dragon is that snake energy, that serpentine energy that a lot of the ancient indigenous tribes draw, and with through petroglyphs and through their dances, they always use snakes. You know, snakes are a strong symbol of transformation and wisdom of the earth.
Mm-hmm. Really are, aren't they? So, just a sec, I'm trying to remember. You were in, so you did the dragon in Hawaii.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And then, one of the things I keep being aware of is how you have consistently over and over, starting at quite a young age, maybe 18 or something, or before
yes.
you married and so on, being able to kind of connect in and go through space and time and life as we know it, or shoot through the present. You used the term wormhole. I'm going, well, it's a bit like that, isn't
yes.
it? And absolutely shift the focus that you're in the moment in
yes.
order to get the wisdom. Or we were talking in the interview before you about finding one's authenticity.
Yes.
And I'm smiling at yours going, well, you go through like eons of time deep within your beingness in order to get these, what, shards of truth or these metaphors.
Very well said. Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that. So we're talking about a journey which is across land, but it's really in you, isn't it?
Yes.
Why do you think you snapped open in such ways? Why? How does that work? Who else can get that? How can we all do that?
Oh, wow, that's a very, very good question. Nobody's ever asked me that question.
We're expecting you to show us how.
Yes. Let me give me a moment, though. The first thought that comes up, and I always like to trust the first thought mm-hmm. without having to go into my head, is the present moment, is the access doorway.
Okay.
And when you can sit or stand or be still into the silence, and this is another very strong directive of the earth, all these directives are in the book, my book Spirit of the Stones,
mm-hmm.
and
I recommend it. I haven't read
it,
but I love
it. We can talk about how people can access that book towards the end, perhaps. But
well, let's just tell them that now.
Through my website, mm-hmm. The book is called Spirit of the Stones. It has an incredible picture on the front that really personifies everything I'm talking about. And the subtitle is A Retrieval of Earth Wisdom by Amalia Kamateros. And you can order that on my website. And the website is Earth, as in planet Earth, spiritwisdom.com. Earthspiritwisdom.com.
And I really recommend it. I still want to...
Yes, no, I'm here with you. I'm right there with you. Okay.
Reading your soul journey, I'm going, was this being bidden from deep within your journey to bring forward this mosaic of experience that's going to help you bring to us a greater understanding of the one earth? Or
I think there was that too, Veronica. You know, I think, as I said, I was an ancient shaman. I never would imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something that was even part of my vocabulary. It just woke up with that time I heard Sedona. It woke up, and it didn't wake up there, because yes, in Egypt I had this incredible vision in the tent, in the pyramids. Remember that in my book?
Yes.
When I saw that big radial disc of this ultraviolet light that zoomed around like a clock with the sound of the didgeridoo, and then I saw that emerald green city, and then all these uncanny, kind of like the Code of the Da Vinci, you know, that book?
Right, yes.
The kind of like a little mystery that happens there for a while with all this emerald green, and that's the talk of the earth coming through.
It's the talk of your rapport with all of life and the earth.
Yes, it is. I'm a bit of a mythological character. I don't know what to say. I mean, I believe we all have that within us. I believe we are all shamans. I believe we all have our own myth.
But just don't stop. The intensity of the disquiet or the discomfort when you don't follow it, I think that's sort of key to a person's authenticity, don't you?
Exactly. And let me tell you how you're going to get each person can get to their shaman, how each person can get to their full potential, how each person can get to that wondrous part of life that's exciting, is to stop and listen to the birds, stop and listen to the empty silence. It's so full of pregnant potential for every single thing, everything, all possibilities, infinite possibilities. That's what happens when you can stop and be very central in that point of listening to the silence. And that mostly can be experienced, I find, in nature. Nature is a gateway, is a doorway into that beautiful world of beauty and truth and authenticity. The rocks aren't running to go somewhere. The trees aren't pushing and comparing to each other and, oh, you've got this and I've got that, I've got to do this now. There's nothing of that judgment going on in that field of oneness.
Mm-hmm.
There's no separation in that field of oneness, and silence is the doorway. Silence is that key that can open that door to the Garden of Eden.
Mm.
And I don't mean silence as in locked away somewhere. I mean inside yourself. And you're going to ask me next how we're going to access that, right?
Mm-hmm. You know what I was going to say? It's interesting to me that you, like many others, got these really intense wake-up calls
right.
at a fairly young age and then lived a life that you tried to construe as a productive, service-oriented married life and so on. But you couldn't pursue a lot of this until you left that. You know what I'm saying?
I know, exactly. That's the same with our own minds. We can't access the joy and the beauty and the mystery and the magic if we're constraining ourselves.
If we're kind of believing in a certain construct.
And I'm not saying that marriage is a constraint. It can be, I look forward to an incredible marriage of beauty and wondrous and travel and adventure and fun. Fun is the key word. But, you know, you're asking me a question I haven't even thought about, and that's really good, and I like that. And I think, as I said, I'm as a soul, why does one person come in singing like an opera singer that changes the world with their tone? Why does another come in through dancing? I think it's part of our collective, the expression of God and all that is expressed through the individual in a unique way according to our soul experiences.
And isn't it amazing there are no two individuals the same?
No,
so
it's really unique.
You have your authenticity. You really have to be courageous, don't you?
Yeah, you do, but really one of the keys to that, really, please everybody understand and know, one of the keys to that authenticity is to really feel what you're feeling. Don't run from your feelings. If you're feeling uncomfortable about something, we try to hide it and look good. And all we're doing is pleasing the ego. We're only running, we're damaging ourselves by not letting ourselves be vulnerable enough to sink down to the deeper part of our own being and be compassionate to some of the parts that we've had that we're running from or judging, actually. Christ was telling us this 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
The ego, you think it's the ego that we're working with when we try to get with the convention, try to live conventionally?
No, I wouldn't say that we're working with the ego to try and live conventionally. I guess we're programmed, and, you know, that goes beyond the ego, I find, the programming thing. I just find that if we try to conform to what looks good. Maybe that's what you're saying, too. Maybe I've just misunderstood what you said. But if we're trying to conform to what looks good, we're not being our authentic self. I remember, let me tell you this. I used to work for the band INXS. Remember the band INXS from Australia?
No, I don't, but vaguely, I think. Yeah.
Well, they were one of the famous rock bands of Australia and fantastic. I mean, they were really up there with U2 as a band. And I was working with them as a naturopathic doctor and massage and health and counseling and things like this. And I remember Michael Hutchence, who all of you out there who remember our beautiful Michael Hutchence, who is now dead, not now passed away into the other world there.
Was he in INXS?
He was the lead singer who was absolutely incredible, very raw in his energy, very authentic on stage, very much like the Doors guy, Jim Morrison, a bit like a Jim Morrison, like that, you know, bit of a sex idol, but not too much, but just very raw and very Australian, very fresh. And I remember my husband and I were working with them, and sometimes whenever I would feel vulnerable or not good enough in the rock world, you know, everyone was gorgeous and all these models and beautiful people and the rock and roll band, they're all beautiful and they've got the latest gear on from London. And I sometimes sat there and I would have a wave going through me of feeling absolutely exposed and not good enough, you know?
Yes,
that one?
I do. Mm-hmm.
You know that feeling?
Yes, I sure do.
Yeah, and I had learned enough from some of the processes I've done with in Australia. I used to do these wonderful workshops called Genesis with Jan Martinengo and David Ward and Johnny King. And they taught me how to really go into the feelings without judgment. And in those moments, I would always drop down and let myself feel the most vulnerable I could be, because I knew as a naturopathic doctor that if I'm suppressing it, it's going to get worse.
Right.
So even in the face of the rock world and these beautiful people, I would just sit there, put my head down, and let myself drop into absolute shame.
Hmm.
That's what the feeling was.
Hmm.
Every time that happened, Veronica, I can almost promise to you, every time that happened, Michael Hutchence, the one that everybody wanted a part of, would come up to me and lift my face up and look into my eyes and say, Amalia, can I please have a massage?
Aww.
I mean, this was like the gift of spirit,
right,
that would come at a point where I was feeling the most dejected and isolated from God.
But allowing yourself to enter and claim that.
Yes, every time. Mm. I could tell you 5 or 6 different times that would happen.
Mm.
I learned, quick and smart, that as a naturopathic doctor also, that if you suppress something, it's going to get deeper and it's going to get worse and it's going to come back with more vengeance.
Mm-hmm. And biochemically or physically or whatever. Mentally.
And emotionally.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
That what we resist persists.
Right.
What we judge, we become.
And if you think it's gone, it's just changed form.
Yeah, so why not just deal with it in the moment? It's like a crying child. When it first yells, when it first asks for you, if we turn to your child when it first asks, look at it through presence and be aware with it, it's not going to start having a tantrum and cry. It's going to be answered.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with our feelings. And that's the way to be authentic.
Hmm. That's excellent. Okay, I'm going to jump to dance.
Yes!
tell us how you began the dance. It's not trance dancing. It's
no.
And I have to tell everybody who's listening, I watched most of the dance that's on your website.
Yes.
Oh, my. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, what an impulse that came through me, the energy that moved through me. It was wonderful.
Thank you.
So speak about the beginning. You know, how did you enter into the world of dancing?
Oh, right. Sure. My both parents were dancers, so this is, you know, part of the history, too, when you say, how do people just snap into these things? Well, I guess my dad was a great rock and roll dancer, and my mother was an incredible Egyptian ballet dancer.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, she had both from Egypt, my parents. They're both Greek from Egypt. They were both raised and born and raised in Alexandria.
Hmm.
And so that was already in my field, I guess, you know?
It's certainly in your genetics already.
Yeah, mm-hmm. In the field that I was born with, born in too, and in the genetics that I came to be into. Yes, and so, you know, that was already that. I've always loved dancing. dancing. I always knew that dancing, this is how I got into my authentic being as well. You're going to love this. I knew within myself that if I could dance as if no one was watching, I would be, that would be the test of my freedom.
And you knew that already.
I knew that from a young age, from, well, you know, when my, in my teenage, in my early 20s, I knew that if I could, when I get to dance, when I'm not self-conscious and I'm just dancing for the world and spirit, then I'm home free. And that's what I've got to be able to do. I danced in front of 23,000 people at one point.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I've danced in many different, I open up sacred and ceremonial earth spirit dance for conferences and events, mm-hmm. and for some big names, too. And I did something for Deepak Chopra just a couple of weeks ago, actually.
Well, tell me this. Did you study dancing or did dancing just come
I did free? Study dance when I was young. I did do the ballroom dancing. I loved that. I did a bit of that. I did some jazz ballet dancing. I then went to, in Australia, in Melbourne, I went to a school called the Creative Dance, Mangala Studios of Creative Dance and Yoga, and that was a very good help. Mm. But, you know, the spirit core was always in there, and that's why I did all these dance things. Mm. And it wasn't really my true form of dance, and what you saw on the website mm-hmm. didn't really happen. Or, you know, for years I would rent a video and put it on the shelf and turn it on and step into the right place and dance and then study myself about what I liked and what I didn't like about my dance. Mm. So I really taught myself mostly what I felt good about myself and what I didn't. But the true form of dance in terms of earth spirit dance came along when I was in the Guatemala jungles just south of Mexico. Mm-hmm. I went to an incredible temple there called Huaxactun, which means the eight stones mm-hmm. temple. Mm-hmm. And there, on the stone edifices, on the temples there, on the top of the Mayan temples, they had platforms there at the top of the pyramids, almost like a pyramid that was cut off three quarters of the way. Mm-hmm. And then that platform there is where the ceremonies to the kings and queens, the priestesses and the priests would do their ceremonies, and the dance priestesses would come and do their offering to the kings and queens. Mm-hmm. And I just stepped into time. I stepped back in time for myself. I was by myself in the jungle. I decided what I was going to do is dance my story, dance my life and my heart and my soul and my spirit and who I am to the jungle, to the imaginary king and queen of the jungle. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like a bit of a myth. Mm-hmm. I let myself go back in time to imagine myself and how I was in those days and how I would have been dancing. So I put some flowers on the altar there and I lit some incense and then I saged the whole platform and very attuned to ceremony. I'm very ceremonially based that way, preparing the space, opening the field, you know, opening my consciousness, opening my awareness, and I started to dance. And I started in such a way that I danced the jungle. Mm-hmm. I danced the pyramids. I danced my story. I danced my rage. I danced my joy. I danced my shame to the world, to the spirit. And that's how, that was my initiation.
How did you feel as you did it?
Awesome!
Did it sort of keep moving through you, moving through you, moving through you?
Oh, my God, like completely. Like now I can take my headphones out. Now I've got an iPod now. But, you know, now finally I got an iPod only a couple of weeks ago. You know, I'm still a little bit of a backwards in time here. But finally got an iPod. I can put my headphones in and dance on top of the rock mesas.
Wow.
And I dance to my joy and gratitude to spirit. Wow. Or I'll dance my prayer. This is what I want in my life. And I let that movement and the dance embody my prayer.
So you let the dance do you?
Yes, I do.
Isn't that wonderful?
But I dance in gratitude, mm-hmm. and I also dance. I manifested, actually, everybody's going to love this. I manifested, and I can say this truly, and it really did happen. I manifested a brand new 2002. In the year 2002, mm-hmm. I manifested a brand new 2002 SUV, BMW SUV.
Oh, wow.
That was actually made for Amalia Kamateros in Germany, and shipped over for me under my specifications, and it was given to me as a gift.
Oh, my.
And that was by me dancing my prayer to spirit, because I was very upset. When I came here and did the work with the earth years later, I was struggling financially a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out to the rocks, and I put the paint on my face, and I put my little rattles on my feet, and I took the boombox out there, and I was very, very seriously, upset. I was a seriously, you know, very upset with nature and with spirit that would take me away from my home and away from my family and away from all my friends to come to a land to redo the wisdom of the stones and to retrieve the wisdom of the stones and do my earthwork and not get paid sufficiently. And the car that I was driving was not at all anything like I was comfortable in to be driving around after being a naturopathic doctor and what I felt comfortable with. I wanted a car that truly reflected my nature and my inner richness. Mm-hmm. So I danced at the spirit. I said, this is what I want.
That's a wonderful manifestation.
I came here from Australia to Sedona, Arizona. I expect to be paid well. You know, I don't need to struggle anymore. I'm not going to be one of those shamans that struggle from place to place. I don't want to do that. I want to be of service to the earth. I want to be a voice for the earth, but I want to be comfortable. Please. Now send me a car that completely reflects my inner rich feeling that I feel that I have. And then this car came.
How did it happen?
I met this fabulous man called Lucky Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit of a story. It's in my book, you see. Where do I start?
I tell you, it's a good book.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I like the book, too. I like it, too. And Earth and I wrote it together. So, you know, Earth did a great job.
Actually, I'll interrupt you and tell people at home that in the book there are great, not dialogues, but words that came from the stones that are really wonderful.
Yeah, they're called retrievals.
Mm. Beautiful.
That's thank you.
Or empowering is a better way to put it.
Yeah, they're quite deep, isn't it? Deep and heartful and soulful of the land, of the earth. A lot of men are reading this book, by the way.
Excellent.
A lot of conscious men, powerful men are reading the book, and I thought it would be a girly book, to be honest,
mm-hmm.
thinking, oh, well, it's my journey. But no, a lot of powerful men stop me in the road even and say, I've just read your book, and wow, it's awesome. And
yeah, there's a lot of sweat in your book from every side of humanity. I like that. Anyway.
Yeah, so I have a lovely friend, Lucky Bennett, who saw me dance one day. Actually, I was at Dragonfly Ranch in Hawaii, and Barbara Moore, who owns that ranch, saw me dancing under the shell. In Hawaii, everyone's kind of pretty naked around. You know, it's not something that we hide from. I was in my own area. She was bringing me breakfast, and she saw me dancing in the shower, and I was dancing my prayer to nature.
Hmm.
Just in the shower, you know, just doing kind of ceremonial movements of, oh, my God, from the desert to Hawaii. Wow. The leaves and the wondrousness. And I was making my movements like this. And she saw that and flipped and said, oh, you know what? Oh, my God, I want the whole world to see this. This is awesome. And she asked me if I could please do a dance offering that evening to this Mr. Lucky Bennett's house. And I did. And he saw that. And he really, you know, loved what he saw and said, wow, that's really amazing. What do you do? And blah, blah, blah. I'm here to write a book and blah, blah, blah. And I'm struggling. And he had so much abundance that he said, look, you know, in Hawaii, it's not unusual that people adopt you.
Oh, really?
No, it's one of the customs in Hawaii. They're called the Hanai family.
Hmm.
Your Hanai family means your adopted family. The Hawaiians adopt you.
Hmm.
And so him being living in Hawaii for 30 years, in a sense, adopted me and started to help me and, you know, he's an architect and one of the best architects in Hawaii, and he did a trade with a person who actually created BMWs, someone who worked with BMWs. And so
wow.
That's how that happened,
hmm.
How the universe conspires.
Wow. So you just wouldn't even have laid it all out as a plan, would you?
No. That's why I love watching movies sometimes. I think, wow, some people who are very intelligently think of how things work in movies and how, you know, it's like life.
Mm-hmm.
Our life is like a movie.
So tell me this, when was it that you, jumping way back to earlier in our conversation, when did you go to Sedona from From Australia.
1998.
98. So it hasn't been that long.
Well, no, it's 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm just checking the time frame here, girl. And you've got your book, which is, you got called to Sedona to work with the Stones and bring forward their information. And you
yes.
started telling me, and then I got excited about the dragon.
Yes.
And you said there was something that they were, that you would be cautionary about.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much for picking that up. I kind of did thread that back in, but well, not at that point where mm-hmm. people may be still hanging on their seats waiting for that part. the part about diving into the void, mm-hmm. the part about facing your fears, the part about sitting in your shame, mm-hmm. the part about, like, when I went into, I don't know if you read that far into my book, when I went into Mexico and I went into that cenote, I went into a cenote, which is an underground cave, and there's waterways under the ground. There.
No, I didn't get to that part.
Cenotes. I walked in there, and the neighbor that I was staying in town with, it was his land, and he dropped me off there, and he said, well, I'll come and take you for a tour. And I said, no, I want to go by myself. You know, very courageous. You know, you've got to be courageous about these things in life. You know, life is a very courageous act.
You have that faith as well, that confidence.
Yes. I could rely on the faith, yes, because of all those dreams and omens and visions that I had that were so strong. Yes, mm-hmm. thank you. Very good.
I imagine big stones with beckoning fingers. Somehow that makes me chuckle.
yeah, absolutely. So I went into this cenote, and this is the sort of thing I'm talking about. And I walked in and kept on walking, and there's lots of stalactites and stalagmites. And to me, this is like a cavern of Earth's treasure.
Right.
You know, the inner earth of Gaia, of the goddess, of the greatest queen we ever know, which is Earth. And I went down to the back there and turned the flashlight off and sat there in complete darkness, complete not anything. Like the Egyptian pyramid is like that too. There's no movement of light or dark. It's complete blackness. Mm. Scary as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And here I am sitting at the back of this cave, like already half an hour walking into the under the earth. I mean, it's ridiculous now that I think about it. But here I am, the flashlight's off, and all these bats are flying past my face, millimeters away from my face.
Hmm. I wouldn't enjoy that too much, I don't think.
Beg your pardon?
I don't know if I'd enjoy that too much.
No, not many people didn't do. My sister, when she read that, she started crying. She just, you know, she couldn't believe the courageousness that I had, and she cried because it scared her. And she's older than I am. But for me, it was an act of sitting in pure stillness and having the faith that I'll be okay, mm. you know, that putting my faith in spirit, in that great spirit, mm. and putting my faith in the earth. And it worked for me. I'm not saying for everyone to do that, but that is like confronting your fear.
Mm-hmm. It is, isn't it?
The fear of being in the cave of darkness and under the earth with all these bats flying past. I did it, and it was a wonderful initiation for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to be bats. It could be the cobwebs of your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a past glitch that keeps on taking you back through dreams. They keep on returning back in symbols of your dreams that you haven't looked at when you were 6 years old. These pieces have to be retrieved. These pieces are like broken pieces of your shards of your soul that need to be returned back home.
Mm-hmm. So the whole point of your transformation is just simply the entering, even into the woundings or the depths of ancient vision. You just had the courage to enter.
Yeah. Yeah.
To retrieve self.
Right? Yes. And, you know, I believe personally that's kind of like finishing that karmic wheel, that karmic wheel of bondage, you know, stepping into the center of that wheel, which is the doorway home to the oneness, to the freedom. It doesn't have to be that you dissolve into nothing. It means that you can still have your body. This is what the ascended masters were doing too. They brought their full consciousness into their embodiment.
Right.
And we're able, the same with Christ, the embodiment of the passion.
And is that where you're headed? Not to necessarily to be Christed that way, but
I think we're all headed for that.
I do too. I was thinking you a little bit more about you on your journey, because we'll have to bring it to an end. But like, where are you headed now? whether it's inside or outside, I don't care right now.
You know, what I'm doing now is bringing this message out. It's just starting to happen for me now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where I'm headed now is to do as much as I can to be a voice of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going now to Ojai, California to give a stone wisdom talk and shamanic dance journey
mm-hmm.
on the 3rd of July. And this all can be seen on my website in the calendar section.
Okay.
I'm giving an Awake the Snake Earth Spirit shamanic dance journey in Santa Cruz on July the 8th.
I want to come to that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's called The Seed of Manifestation. It's about dancing your prayer awake, you know,
right.
Like what I did. I'm teaching people to do what I did. I'm not teaching anything I didn't learn. I'm also at the conference, at the Dowsers conference, and I will be giving a few talks. And
will you also demonstrate your dancing? Or will
I don't know. I'm talking with someone about that as possible, but I have 3/4 of an hour, so when I talk, I pretty much use my body, pretty much, I've been told. So even here alone in this room, I'm dancing around the room as I speak. Because I'm embodying what I'm saying. There's no use to coming from the mind.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm doing what I can to put this message out to the world. And it's not easy having to fund it myself and do all the work myself. That's difficult because I'd rather be out in nature. So where am I heading to in myself? Sacred Union.
Okay.
Sacred Union meaning dropping down from my head into my heart and being the fullest potential that I can be, my most authentic self. I don't need to become anything specially on a I don't want to be on a pedestal. I want to be my full self in freedom. That's where I'm going. That's where I'm heading.
That's great.
That's plenty, you know?
Yeah, yeah. This has been very inspiring for me and very, very enjoyable.
Great!
More than enjoyable. Of course, it's edification, but I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and if anyone wants to email me, can I give my email address?
Please.
If anybody wants to connect with me, I'm very happy to do that. I want to eventually do a newsletter to be able to bring some of these new ideas out. But my email address is info at earthspiritwisdom.com. That's my website, earthspiritwisdom.com. So the email is info@earthspiritwisdom.com.
Thank you for that. And again, Amali is going to be at the Dowsers Conference and also is giving a dance. This is not just for people at the Dowsers Conference. Are you
That's
giving
right.
a dance workshop on the 8th of July?
Yes, it's in Santa Fe. It's at the Pacific Cultural Center.
Santa Cruz.
Yes, Pacific Cultural Center. It's a yoga school. At 1307 Seabright Avenue, Santa Cruz, yes.
1307 Seabright Avenue, Santa Cruz.
Yes.
And that'll be on your website.
Yes, it's all on my website. Absolutely, yes. And the flyer
Wonderful.
Will be there, too, if anyone wants to click on it and have a... You can see me on the website.
And one more thing before you leave,
yes.
And I don't know if we have time for this, but what is the Earth Breath? Can you share it with us?
The Earth Breath?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Earth Breath is what... That's when I learned it in Mexico. I had the dream, and it taught me that.
Mm-hmm.
The earth breath is where you can ground your feet onto the earth
mm-hmm.
and visualize the roots of that root chakra. The sciatic nerves that come out of that root chakra act like roots of the body. And they go down and our 2 feet are like plugs, prongs of an appliance into the plug, plugged into earth, right? And we get switched on
mm-hmm.
and we let those roots go down and we can take a deep breath. And through our roots coming out of our root chakra, we can take that breath and let that breath and all those things we want to let go of coming down through the roots, down through our legs, through our calves, into our feet, and let that out breath go all the way into earth. The earth receives our energy, but also receives the parts that we don't want. The earth will transmute that energy like it does the dead leaves of a tree. And like our excrements. And then we can breathe back up those feet, the earth energy up right away, all the way up through into our crown and out like wings. So it's kind of like that cycle breathing in up through our feet, up our legs and our calves, up through our heart, up through our head, all the way out. And then with our hands, we can open our hands like wings and spread those wings down to the earth again.
Excellent. And I read some section where it said then we can become clear conduits for...
Yes.
That's great.
Yes, you see, that's exactly right. There's so much here, isn't there? We could talk about this for days. That, you know, when we clear our emotions and clear our physical blockages, that hold the emotions, as well as needing to do cleansing and taking care of some of the good foods we eat, and try to avoid those preservatives and artificial colours and processed foods. Go to natural foods. The Earth's bounty is what we'll connect with that nourishment.
Well, we're on the same page as you, but we're being pulled off stage right now.
Okay.
So I have to say thank you so much, Amalia. I really appreciate your work. And everybody
thank
tune
you,
in to Earth Wisdom. What is it? Earth Wisdom? EarthSpiritWisdom.com.
Yes, correct.
And many blessings.